This is the ESOP guy. Hopefully you're having a wonderful week wherever you find yourself in tuning in today on our journey to an ESOP. We're going to kick off with this and hopefully explain what this means.
Tax-free.
IRS can't touch one cent.
You're that smart banker would kill his wife, aren't you? Why should I believe a smart banker like you? Well, I can end up in here with you.
It's perfectly legal. Go ask the IRS. They'll say the same thing. Actually, I feel stupid telling you this. I'm sure you would have investigated the matter.
So, what this episode is going to be about, even though that sounds like it's about the tax-free nature of ESOPs, is more about explaining the financial ins and outs of your ESOP site visit. So in this case, we are exploring that topic as it relates to understanding the financial highlights and also the potential transaction itself with the trustee and the valuation firm as part of the ESOP process. So within that process, of course, we have this step called the site visit. And as I've talked about in the previous episodes, the site visit really is designed to explain multiple things that are really important to the trustee and the valuation firm, primarily how the company functions. So we did some work on the industry. We did some work on the company overview the last two episodes. And then this episode is when we tie out the ESOP site visit presentation. It'll be really focused on the financial highlights of the company and the potential transaction. So as we think about this topic, I did choose Shawshank Redemption, and the topic today is really explaining financials to other people. Now, in the setting that we have within the site visit, it's really important that this is done well. And I think what I'm trying to get to with the Shawshank movie is how obviously Andy Dufresne in this movie is very, very a sharp banker. Like, he's a sharp tax person. And the bottom line is that it's important to be able to explain really clearly the financial, how the financials work of your business to not only that from a trustee's perspective, but also from a valuation person's perspective. And I think this is really part of understanding that the ESOP sell side process itself is important in terms of who you work with as the advisor, because they're going to be able to guide you through the best possible presentation, not in any way to misshape or transform your financials into something that they're not, but in order to get deeper into the financials and understand those. And so as we talk about this topic today, we're going to talk not only just about how do you get into the financial highlights and then connect that into the transaction, but getting into the support related to the financials as well, and why they make sense when you get down to the full analysis or the due diligence that the trustee and the valuation firm are going to have. As always, please go to our website at journeytoanesop.com to check out other episodes. If you are new to today, welcome. This is actually the fourth in a series of episodes regarding the ESOP site visit, so you may want to go back and check out the other episodes. So as we start this, I wanted to kind of say that the importance, if we start with the end in mind, what we want to do is we want to make sure just the highlights of what our goals are when we get to this section. So kind of to go back through the buildup of the presentation, you know, as I said, we talked about the industry highlights, the trends related to the companies, experience in the marketplace, like where they fit in the market, what's their business model, who are their customers, a lot of that stuff we dealt with in the first episode. As we go into the depth of the company, we're going to get into more in the company overview of how the company actually functions in the marketplace, who they are, who's their team, what are their business processes. All of this is kind of continuing to build the stage for how we're going to actually explain the financial part of it. So one of the things that I would do normally in this part of the presentation is to start off with just some high level overview of the company's revenue as a whole, and discussing, as we've already kind of talked about the customers likely in the company overview, we've already talked about the revenue probably composition, but that's going to be important. And what I mean by composition is first off, how much revenue, if it's concentrated versus not concentrated. So if it's diversified revenue, that just means that it's in among, you know, multiple different types of customers. What are those customers? Who are those customers, as we've talked about in the company overview? And when we think about the revenue, the percentages are going to be important in terms of who the customers are. And it could be the products and services that those revenues represent. In some cases, some companies have both products and they have services. So what's the breakdown of all of those? So the composition of revenue is important. I think it's also important to delve into, as we start to think about the historical part of the financial statements, is to delve into the historical revenue track. Like, where has the company been revenue-wise? Of course, we're thinking as we're talking through that part of the presentation about the growth of the company. So if the growth of the company over the last, say, 5 years, as we start to deal with the historicals, if the growth of the company has been pretty solid, maybe percentage-wise from year to year, or it's been up and down, topsy-turvy, like there's been, you know, hey, we grew 1 year and we came down another year. One of the things that we want to talk about is the story behind the revenue numbers. Like, what does it mean? Like, what happened? If it's 5 years ago, were we dealing, for instance, with some issues related to some events that happened that were outside of the company's control, which namely one of the main events that we've been talking about for the last couple of years is COVID. In some cases, COVID totally ruined revenue for some companies. It just trashed the revenue part of the company, and the company was left surviving. And in those cases, maybe they did survive primarily on the PPP money that the government was able to provide through the banks and the necessary means. Maybe the other side of that coin is the COVID actually bumped up the numbers, and all these people are at home and they're buying more of this and that. And so we talk about the COVID bump as part of the revenue trend in history. So there's going to be these abnormalities to revenue that were, we would just say, the outside forces that kind of are not normal to the revenue history, that might have been outside of a normal type of economic trend that would happen. Interesting, like revenue, on the revenue side too, some companies have gone through this transformation in the marketplace, like because in some states, they've received, you know, the states themselves have become economic powerhouses in the last 5 years because there's been a migration of people, they bought, you know, like with COVID, there was a spike in, say, products and services that were kind of related to people being at home. But another part of the trends could be that the actual economic position of the geographic part that the company's in just ended up growing. And so because of that permanent growth, the company's now at a different level. And so the reasons behind the revenue changes are going to be important. And I'm dealing with those from an economic impact as far as the actual company in the environment there are. But the other part of that is to go internal. So those are more external types of issues to think about with revenue. The internal things about revenue are going to be things like, you know, how is my company changing its infrastructure to meet the growth and the demand of, or the growth of revenue, and then also to meet the demand of the work that comes in from growing the revenue as well. So, and I'm kind of steering towards growth, but the same is true for other things. Like we, you know, as a company's story goes on revenue, it could be other things that happened internally that we need to think about. So let's just say part of the story of, as we talk about the five-year history of revenue, might be that the company internally created a strategic plan that then funded a new sales department, funded a new marketing campaign, funded a new Google search campaign, or some type of specific nature. When one of the things I look for, when you see some robust growth from 1 year, one fiscal year to another, I think that you just need to start really asking the question, like, what really happened? You know, whether it would be you know, 5 years ago or the last couple of years, what's really the source of growth? And it's going to be, like I said, it's going to fall on the external and the internal, or a combination of the both. And what we are trying to do is create the history that helps us to determine what the future is. Cause what I would say about the financial highlights is we're going to have this continued build up towards what I would usually end with is the forecast. But everything that we're doing here has a reason why we're not wasting time by talking about other things, that we need to be strategic about the time that we're spending here and going through it. So one of the things about an ESOP transaction too is that we want to have a good sense for a stability, a sustainable and a stable economic environment for the company. And we want to be realistic about what those trends are. And from a revenue perspective, then there's certainly going to be, as we talked about, external and internal forces that will help us to contribute to it. Now, is it sustainable? As we talk about sustainability, one of the questions that might come up from the valuation firm on the other side that represents the trustee is this, let's talk about the same dynamics. Like, are there different people now? Are they the same people? You know, we've covered probably in the company overview, the leadership team, but what's led to their success? If we talk about these internal elements of the infrastructure that have led to more and more revenue, we need to go into as well that they're all there still, or we're changing those, or so really when you get down to the forecasted level and sustainability level, what's going to be important is if those infrastructure pieces are there, primarily the people, but also the processes, then one could also conclude that, hey, we're going to continue on the same path that we've been on for other reasons. So it could be not only a spike in the demand for the product and services, but it also is this combination of things that are happening. And so we want to nail down what exactly the reasons why we've had the growth in the past. Now, the other side of it, I kind of don't need to say this, but if there's been a downturn, an economic downturn, and now we're in a rebound, we really need to understand the downturn. Like, what was it? If it wasn't an external environment, maybe there was something internal that the company did. So the positives and the minuses and all that kind of blends into what I would say is the real revenue story behind it. And so you can see I've spent a lot of time on revenue. It's such an important element to the understanding the financial highlights and making sure that the detailed information is really there. And we're not there at the forecast yet, but we're going to come back to this as well. Now, the next thing I'm going to drive into with the presentation is going to be dealing now with the detail behind the income statements. So what are we seeing in the historical gross margin? So obviously we've talked about revenue. Now, the composition of gross margin. Now, let me just say historically, let's just say that you have a very low gross margin over the last 5 years, but it's just creeping up. Genuinely speaking, it's just going up. So if that's the scenario, good scenario, by the way, that's really positive, having more and more gross profit. Some reason is happening, like within the financials. So we're not presenting just the financial numbers, right? If you really get what I'm saying, you're going to get into the detail of the story behind the numbers. And so let's just say the scenario is that the company has continued to grow gross margin multiple points a year. So, 2 percentage points in gross margin can lead to a lot more profitability. So it could be the only reason you have more gross margin is a couple factors, right? We are increasing our ability for pricing that we hadn't had in the past. So we have pricing differentials on our business that we didn't have before. So we're more profitable per sale of business product or business service or whatever we have. And then the other part of it is what our gross margin is improving, because our cost of goods sold or our cost of revenues or the direct costs that we're engaging in we're creating either more cost efficiencies. Now, which, to be honest, in the last 5 years has been much more difficult because of the inflationary pressure we've seen on products and services and that kind of thing. So direct costs are difficult, but it is possible to become more efficient. Or one of the things that I see when I get into some of the details regarding the composition of revenue and the composition of cost of goods sold, is that the mix of gross margin, gross profit schedules might be, the company might be finding, hey, this is way more profitable. We're doing less of this and more of that. So this is just a good thing to stop and talk about in a little bit as far as potential benefits of really understanding your numbers. And in some cases, you know, you have to know that some companies don't dig into the details sometimes because they're so busy growing the business that they don't actually look at why they're growing or what they're targeting. This is a very good place to kind of look and stop and look at the details. So if I have a whole combination of opportunities on the table as a business, and I can now, because of my analysis of growth of profitability by product or service, I can look at, I know my company does way better profit-wise than the other side of the coin, the spectrum, where there are maybe really, really razor-thin margins on some other products and services. Or even in some cases, when you analyze profitability across the spectrum of products and services, you might find that there is even losses on some of these. But again, I'm trying to say this in a very nice way, that there's some companies that don't really look at that, and then they wonder why they're not ever making the kind of money they should be making when you do some benchmarking and you say, hey, well, compared to these other companies. But when you get down to the business strategy, I've seen companies say, all right, well, our business plan, our business strategy is we're going to take some of these as loss leaders, but we're going to, you know, discipline ourselves to get that up to the margin we want, or we're going to cut bait, we're going to get out of that. So there's a lot of number, like stories behind the number, but the business strategy needs to make sense. And we're having this great opportunity to explain, you know, where we're going. Keep in mind, again, as we talked about the revenue side, we're doing a good job here of planting the seed to support what's going to be in the forecast. So both from a forecasted revenue and a forecasted gross margin, which is really going to be important. What I say about the forecast all the time is that history for companies does repeat itself. Unless there's a change and a disruption or a way of doing things that hasn't been done, history does repeat itself. And so maybe there's a new management, maybe there's a new strategic plan, but those types of things need to be evidenced in a lot of ways by the historical financials to show that we're actually making progress towards that type of future potential success. And again, the same thing, I kind of go into the positives, but on the negatives, if the gross margin is declining over the last 5 years, because, you know, it could be for a number of reasons, could be inflation pressure on wages, direct costs could be increased, you know, with supply chain, all these things can be a problem. When we go back to the forecast, if we're showing a downward trend in our historical financials for gross margin, then we need to be aware of the forecasted trends. And if we're showing a downward trend for the last 5 years, and then suddenly in the next 5 years, we're showing a positive trend, well, be prepared to explain that, right? We need to understand why we were, and then come back and say, all right, this is what was happening, and we addressed it, and we're back on track the way we should be. Now, the third area here is we're just kind of breaking out the G&A or the income statement is the G&A expense, the general and administrative expenses, or some people say SG&A. But the bottom line is there's overhead expenses that the company has created, or that they are they're representing part of like the reality of just running a business, right? So you have your rent, you got your marketing expenses, you've got your insurance expenses. And a lot of these are just fixed costs that you're going to have to pay no matter what. In some cases, some G&A expenses are related to the strategic plan or the growth plan. So marketing expenses could be, you know, historically could have been, I've had situations where marketing expenses were really much higher 5 years ago, but the company figured out a better way to market and didn't actually grow the company's revenues. And they were able to kind of reduce the actual marketing expenses because they did a lot of trial and error type of things. So again, how we explain this is really important because we're getting at a lot of the thoughts and the questions behind finance, the way finance people think and the way valuation people think, which is for an ESOP site visit, is how we need to orient our conversation. You know, it's financial related to the valuation, which is going to come down to risk itself. And all of those things are kind of overlapping themselves in a Venn diagram type of idea. So you're touching on all of these things as you go through each of these topics. So if G&A expense is flat, great. If it's going down as a percentage of sales, great, because we're able to control more costs. And what we want to say about G&A is this, is the company is at that point, you know, and there's some kind of point where they've really kind of leveled the G&A expenses off so that all the growth of the revenue and the gross margin that hopefully is healthy can just kind of waterfall down and to become profit and more and more net income. That is where cash flow is created. And in some cases, there's other G&A expenses that are coming. Like, for instance, we're changing the succession plan process and we're going to hire some key people that we haven't had before that are really overhead. And in order for us to get to this next level, quote unquote, that's different. Now, that's going to help, you know, I mean, that's going to be important to be able to explain when we get into the understanding of the, how the actual, really to explain how the actual profits created in the company and how that's repeated over and over again. So once you've got all through that, you know, I'd say that if G&A is going up, you need to explain why and what's going to happen differently. All of this is going to bridge into the forecast as we get there. So the other part of the conversation behind the income statement is going to be just breaking down any other income items that seem kind of obviously maybe out there. So normally other income can be pretty nominal, but if you have things like big PPP money or ERTC money or things like that, or big gains on investments or unrealized gains, those things just need to be identified. And then when we get to the next part of the presentation, it's just about normalizing that net income into cash flow. And so when we go through the normalization discussion, it's just really to go back through those schedules and really looking at what's the potential add backs or deductions relative to the company, and how do those make any sense. So normally what we would do is just make sure that we would have some kind of schedule that ties out historically those add backs so that we can really go back and look at those. Now, the normal ones that you're going to find typically are going to be depreciation and interest, and then CapEx. So depreciation is a non-cash expense. Interest expense, because we're doing a cash-free, debt-free transaction, is just added back to cash flow. And then capital expenditures are just your fixed asset purchases the company has to purchase. Some companies are more capital intensive than others. And so, but there's usually a relationship between obviously CapEx and depreciation that can sometimes be pretty close. And other times there's spikes in CapEx for other reasons that have happened for different purposes. And then those could potentially be normalized out as well. It just depends on the circumstances, but not to get too hung up on all of those elements, but you do want to really think about several things here with normalization. What is the owner comp going forward after the owner compensation, after the transaction? And how would that actually look at if we looked at the owner comp, being like, that person's either replaceable and not really he or she's being paid possibly by the company, but not necessarily needing to be paid because it's a part of the company's salary position, but we don't necessarily have a functional, they don't necessarily have a responsibility in the day-to-day things that have to be done. So if there is somebody that you're having to hire back into the company to replace that, there's going to be some kind of net differential on the owner compensation. Other things could be outside of that could be the owner benefits that they have and just balancing those out as well. There might be in the historicals, there might be some non-recurring expenses. Of course, PPP is a non-recurring income item that has to get normalized out at 100% of whatever it was. But there also might be some expenses that the company has been having to pay out, and they're really not truly real expenses. So those will be examples of non-recurring expenses. Could be like a lawsuit the company went through, settled the case, and did not have, you know, any major issue. So that's really the normalization. There's a lot to normalization, and this episode is really not going to get too deep in that, but I do want to cover that. That's going to be something that will be discussed and highlighted in the financial section of the presentation. The next thing I usually go through is really detailing the balance sheet and the components of the balance sheet from a current asset, long-term asset, current liability, long-term liabilities. Make sure that those are really explained well over the last 5 years and how those trends need to make sense as we think about the forecasted, or as we think about the historical revenue and the historical requirements of the company. Helps us to kind of also look at the debt of the company, the ongoing debt that the company has, and how much that debt is going to continue in the future, depending on now we're leveraging the company as an ESOP. So those are some things I would be really focused on when we're going through the balance sheet section. There might be some, I like to look at the 5-year trends too, just to see if there's anything that kind of sparks anybody's interest related to some changes. Recently, some of the changes we're seeing on the balance sheets, just because of the new accounting provisions, are the operating lease liabilities that are now being put on the liability section. And then there's the right of use part of the asset that's being put on. So these are just accounting provisions, and they don't really make a main change in the valuation world, but there's things that you have to put on the balance sheet and look at and understand as you go through it. So the main thing too of the balance sheet is understand that the transaction itself is going to have really two components to the negotiation. You're going to have the enterprise value piece, which is really representative of the cash flow value of the business. So as we go through valuation episodes, we always talk about the process of doing the forecast and creating a discounted cash flow model. But the other side of the equation is what is on the balance sheet that doesn't need to be there, which we would all call an excess working capital, or in addition to that, you might have this non-operating asset that could be representative of a long-term asset that's not really needed. So that those things need to be normalized as well. And so thinking about the components of the balance sheet is going to be important, because it's going to set up the conversation for what's really going to be needed. In some cases, there's life insurance on there. Cash value of life insurance might be obviously canceled at the time of closing. So that would add to the purchase price. So really the trustee and the valuation firm are going to want to understand those accounts and make sure that makes sense. If there's something in there that we have represented correctly. This is why I'm going to digress for a second. This is why, though, when you have a company that has an audit, CPA independent audit report, a company that has a CPA prepared reviewed financial statement, those are really helpful when you get to this, because it really does help to be able to nail down from an accounting perspective, the proper way to present those. Some of the issues that come about in ESOP deals is because you have internal financial statements that are not generally accepted accounting principles. They're not under GAAP. And so like I had talked about gross margin, in some cases, some companies don't book cost of revenue or cost of goods sold. And so they put everything in direct costs, and it can be confusing in some ways. It's not like it's wrong and the net numbers are going to be right at the end of the day. And I'm certainly not saying that you shouldn't do an ESOP deal without it's nice to have the audit and the review, as we go through this discussion, because it's going to be, a lot more solid. And so it's just something to kick around a little bit in terms of your advisor as you start thinking about possibly doing an ESOP, whether you should just go ahead and get a financial statement. You know, I'm not an advocate of wasting people's money, but at the same time, I do think it does make a better deal when you get down to it. In a lot of cases, we end up upgrading the bank financing. They end up wanting to get a reviewed statement. So that comes as well down the road as well. So it's just sometimes easier to be prepared for that. Once we've done with the balance, once we've really worked through the balance sheet, what we want to now do is funnel the conversation into the actual estimated required working capital. And so what's important about this is that we're going to negotiate the target required working capital. And what here's where we're going to get the opportunity to kind of show the valuation firm and the trustee how we're thinking about the working capital as there's multiple methods to determine what the required working capital is. So my advice is just to go through that on a higher level and just kind of give an indication of what you're thinking that should be. It does create a little bit of a good upfront dialogue, I think, for what could be. We don't want a big surprise when it comes to working capital. So if the trustee and the valuation firm are anticipating a lot more working capital, at least we can have the conversation early in the process and nail down the thought process behind what is the actual working capital needed for the company. So in that, I mean, one thing I'll just say about this is that this is where it gets kind of confusing for people when you get to the discuss valuation is the buyer, when we think about fair market value, the hypothetical buyer in this situation, which is the ESOP, is buying the cash flow of the company. And the cash flow is basically generated because the company has a certain elements of resources that are all kind of in alignment, right? Some of those are in their balance sheet, like the way it takes, you know, maybe the assets that they have, the inventory that they have, some of the equipment maybe they have. All of these things work together in terms of being able to produce a certain amount of revenue that produces cash flow. So the buyer's buying cash flow. And because of that, they're going to need, the buyer's going to need a certain amount of working capital, which is defined as current assets minus current liabilities to help to make sure the company is able to continue to create that cash flow. So if that actual working capital at the time of closing is lower than the, required working capital, then that purchase price is too high because the buyer is going to have to now inject more capital into working capital to get the same amount of cash flow. So, and the opposite holds true too. If there's more working capital that needs to be there, then that should increase the purchase price because the buyer actually is getting the benefit of more working capital as part of, so they would have less cash flow to have to invest. So that's why those two pieces are so important in thinking about it. So the other thing I like to do, especially if I have an audit or review, I like to go through the cash flow statements over the last 5 years and just show the operating portion of the cash flow, the financing and the investing activities, and just run through those trend wise and see if there's anything. Of course, you want to do this before you do the trustee and the valuation meet. But you want to run through those and just see if there's anything really strange about what's happened in those cash flow statements. And so that would kind of help complement some of the historical cash flow analysis you're doing through the income statement and the normalization and just make sure that those things kind of are somewhat in line and make sense. So once that's done, we have set all of the stage for really discussing the forecast. So the forecast here is I would say, as we build the momentum, and it's kind of the what everybody's been waiting to kind of talk about and see, because really when you get down to the ESOP valuation, a lot of the value is going to hinge around the forecasted cash flow, which what we're saying is that under a DCF model, the present value of those cash flows is what the buyer's buying. So presenting a good forecast is really important. And all of the things we just talked about in the last three episodes regarding ESOP site visit have been gearing towards substantiating this. And I kind of talked about this really at the front end with the income statement historically, but it's kind of the same conversation with the forecasted income statement. And so we're going to go back into the revenue. And now we've built a case for the revenue going forward, the sustainability of that revenue, their business development plans, all the things that go into creating a solid revenue in the future. Same thing with the gross margin discussion. So I'm kind of working through this relatively quickly because I spent so much time talking about the historicals, but it's the same discussion. But now we're just getting more in detail about why is the forecast going to hold true? One of the things about the forecast that, you know, you need to think about, that's really, I'd say, is a standard ESOP consideration on the trustee side is going to be the question of who prepared the forecast. So who prepared the forecast is important because the company needs to prepare the forecast. If the sell side advisor in a black box prepared the forecast and told the client, their client, hey, we're going to sell your business. Here's your forecast that you want to go with. That's not so good for an ESOP deal because that means that the people that are really responsible for understanding, number one, understanding the background of the company, understanding the potential customers, the new opportunities. If those people were not integrally involved in the forecast, then there's definitely an issue. And the same issue is like maybe the shareholder at the top that's not that involved in all these, if that person just prepared a forecast, then it's not going to have as much credibility. And the valuation firm is going to have no choice but to discount that forecast. So as we go through that, the final part of the forecast is just to kind of go back through the same thing we talked about with the income statement, is just get to the gross profit margins and the G&A expenses, and then just deal with net income. And then from there, you really need to just go back through any potential future adjustments that you're going to find in the forecasted cash flow to get you. And it could be, again, the change, if you've estimated the forecasted salaries to include the owner comp, then you can just add those back into the bottom of the adjustments. If you've estimated other things that are built in there that are going to be add backs, you can always take those out. Some cases in the forecast, we just adjust in the forecast for each line items for real potential costs. The other thing that helps is to try to do some kind of capital expense budget. If you have a capital expenditure that's significant, might really, really be helpful to show what that looks like, what the company's going to need in relationship to future revenue. So that's going to get us a cash flow line that can then be managed for the process the valuation firm is going to go through and really look at what exactly they're going to need. So with all of that, we're going to kind of finish with the ESOP transaction and just go really through brick by brick. What are we really trying to accomplish with the sale? And that's going to include, so that there can be conversation around it, the closing date. If we go backwards, that's going to include whether or not we're going to have warrants and SARs on the transaction. That's going to include, again, what the percentage of what we're actually selling. Are we going to have bank financing? Is there only going to be seller financing? And so as we go through that, really the conversation with the transaction is really kind of more of a back and forth between the trustee, the valuation firm, and just to making sure they really understand the components of the deal and make sure that they feel like, you know, they are up to speed on all of it. So, and with all of that, we were able to kind of just start to settle in on you know, the next steps of the ESOP process, which has always been fun. The ESOP site visit to me is like the most eventful part of the process because it brings everybody together in person. I always think that's fun. And it's also really fun to be able to talk about the company and really highlight some of the things, you know, in that meeting. So it's really, when it's done really well, I think it's an integral part of the ESOP process and sets up for due diligence and negotiation really quite well, so that there's a very smooth part of the process that can happen next.
And that's how it came to pass that on the second to last day of the job, the convict crew that tarred the plate factory roof in the spring of 49 wound up sitting in a row at 10 o'clock in the morning, drinking icy cold Bohemia-style beer, courtesy of the hardest screw that ever walked a turn at Shawshank State Prison.
Thanks so much for listening today. If you do have questions, go to our website at journeytoanesop.com. If you like the podcast, if you love the podcast, share it with a friend and see if it might be helpful for them. If you have questions, you can always go to their website, journeytoanesop.com, and ask those. And with all of that, have a wonderful Thanksgiving, have a wonderful holiday season, and look forward to our next step on this journey to an ESOP.